Hi, Margo. How
Hi,
are you?
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Okay. And Margo, I just want to, first of all, introduce you. And thank you also for coming in today.
Thank you.
Margo Pelletier, am I saying your name right?
Yes.
I had the honor of interviewing you. I think your partner also, maybe about 4 years ago.
Quite a while ago.
Okay.
This is like a reunion because you and I interviewed Margo, sure. I think it was like five years ago.
Okay, cool. Okay, so that's, yeah.
When you were in the very early stages of your film.
Kind of mid-stage, but.
Yeah.
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 So, we interviewed you while you were producing your film, The Freeing of Sylvia Baraldini. I actually last year had the opportunity with this beautiful culmination of events and coming into Catskill at the community theater, a 500-seat theater completely filled, and this film finally done. And I must say that I was totally impressed by it from start to finish. Not only the politics, the way it was done, the music, everything about it was great. And particularly for me, I was really love the historical, the history that it was embedded in, which was not just, it was a history of the Black Power movement, I think, which I thought was just laid out beautifully, which culminated, in the arrest of Sylvia Baraldini. But we had you here today because this Saturday, people will have another opportunity, if they haven't seen it already or they want to see it again, to see this film at the Sanctuary for Independent Media.
Correct. In Troy, New York. And the address is 3361 6th Avenue, Troy, New York. And that'll be playing at 8 p.m. at the Sanctuary.
Is there a website in case there's... it's a little tricky to get to.
Yes, there is. It is a little tricky to get to, and I'm the wrong person to ask on how to get there. I always end up there. It's www.mediasanctuary.org. And looking at it here on their brochure, the M is capital, so media, and the S is capital, mediasanctuary.org.
Okay, great. And that'll be December 11th, Saturday at 8 p.m. And get there a little early so you can look around the sanctuary. They have a wonderful gallery. I'm not sure what's up right now. I think it's LGBT youth.
Homeless youth
photography, which I had an opportunity to see with a previous event. I think anybody in the Columbia Green area, or for any area for that matter, you know, would do well in just familiarizing themselves with the sanctuary. And going back to the film, since the film has been out, let me just go very quickly through this. Winner, Best Documentary, Harlem International Film Festival. Winner, Best Documentary, Tacoma Film Festival. Winner, Most Principled Film, Seattle True Independent Film Festival. Winner, Patois Award, New Orleans International Human Rights Film Festival. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit more about this film you also brought in the music, which we might be focusing on a little bit because we don't want to give away the entire film, but the music's amazing too. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the film is focused through the life of former political prisoner Sylvia Baraldini, and her main conviction, if it's known at all, is for helping to free the former Black Panther Assata Shakur in the late 70s. And through Sylvia's life, we were able to talk about what Lisa Thomas and myself, Lisa Thomas is the co-producer and director, feel is one of the most central issues within our country, the United States, even today, and that's racism, both at large, but also within the left. And Sylvia Baraldini was actually used as an example by the state and the U.S. government. So through her life, we could talk about a lot of repressive measures that were used and targeted against some of the most radical movements happening in the 70s and 80s in the United States, used to silence these movements and dismantle them for example, the RICO conspiracy law. We go into the use of the grand juries. We go into the beginning of building isolation control units for political prisoners within the U.S. political system. Mm-hmm. All these things could be actually talked about through Sylvia's life, and we could watch a young activist become progressively impassioned and dedicate her life to political struggle, primarily first through the influence and inspiration of the Black Liberation Movement and the human rights movement led by the Black Liberation Movement, and then the anti-war movement. Mm-hmm. And you could see kind of a logical development, and we tried to place her actions, the actions of her political organization and the other organizations that she was in support with, in the context of their time.
Right. And one of the things that really struck me about the film was not only the telling of that transformation. It's all amazing transformations in consciousness that have affected me, Malcolm X or the development of these amazing human beings. But the fact that it was grounded in this history, I'm 51 now, and I think back to that time and how it touched me, but how important it is to know this history and how important it for it to be documented in a way that's interesting and compelling to young people today, because we still are dealing with those issues of racism, of civil liberties being taken away. Look at what's happening right now with WikiLeaks, and also everything under the Patriot Act. U.S. citizens can be rendered to other countries and tortured. It's happened, Guantanamo. So these are all very relevant issues to today.
Yeah, that's one of the. I've seen the movie a couple of times now, and it's. I always see new things in it that's so rich and dense with information, and also along the lines of the importance of the film what it presents historically. I think is, as an artist, one of the things I loved about it visually was really great stock footage that you all dug up and included in the film that's from various historical situations that I had never seen before. And so I think that's also a level where just visually for younger people now to see these images that haven't been presented before is just so fantastic.
Yeah, especially now when the media, I'm talking more about the newspapers, sort of have their hands tied, and the journalists that are traveling to the countries that we're at war in, kind of have their hands tied as well. So you're not getting that visual information the way you did in that time period.
Right.
And, you know, Lisa and I believe that seeing is believing, and we never wanted to put out information without backing it up visually.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we were appealing to a younger audience. You know, we had a lot of sympathetic people that knew this history, but we really did want younger people who didn't live through it to see it, to actually see it, because it's very difficult to get them to reinvent that time period today and to understand that we're not talking about a handful of activists. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about huge numbers, you know, huge numbers within college campuses, within communities, and to get that feeling, we really wanted to show it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they were networking, those activists, without computers.
That's right.
Yeah.
The other thing that was very well documented also was the whole prison industrial complex and what Sylvia went through. I don't think people really realize deeply what a prison experience is in this country, what it can be. She went through long periods of isolation, extreme isolation, which borders on torture. And so that was also well documented. I don't know if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, well, the political prisoners that are inside the prisons, and they're numerous, are not treated the same way that other prisoners are treated. They're denied even the rights, the few rights that prisoners have. And they're kept intentionally in isolation oftentimes because they don't want them organizing. Mm. I mean, this is what these people do. This is what their lives are about. So, you know, for example, they're spending lifetimes, some of them, in prison, and yet they're not allowed a job or to eat in the general areas and that kind of thing. And it's very intentional. And it actually has been stated as a form of torture. I mean, human beings are social animals, and if any of us are social animals, political organizers and activists are.
Absolutely. I just want to say, Margo, you brought a lot of music along, so just let me know when you want me to put some of this music on. Tell us a little bit about how that fit into the film.
I would love to talk about the music a little bit.
Great. Let's go for it.
One thing I wanted to say, I really need to give credit to Gerald Von Stoddard, originally from Red Hook, but at a young age, at an age where he was quite troubled and lost, came to Hudson, New York, and was taken under the wing of Claudia Bruce and Linda Mussman from Time Space Limited. And they kind of brought him into adulthood and both raised his political consciousness and his skill base. And it was at that time that we were fortunate enough to be introduced to him through them. And we were looking for an editor. We were finally in a position. We had won a sizable grant from NISCA, and we were ready to begin editing on our film and looking for an editor in the area. And they suggested Gerald, and we looked at his reel, and we were very taken with it. It was very moody and groovy. Mm-hmm. And we began working with him, first in conjunction with TSL, so he was working for TSL, and under their wing he was working for us. Eventually, like all young people, he you know, started to feel his oats and left them and worked for us independently for 2 years. He's a very gifted artist and composer, which was fortunate for us. He did not know the time period, so had a very keen curiosity in the politics. And I kind of became, again, his second political teacher. So it was very fresh to him. Mm-hmm. And I was after a groove of the 70s, which is kind of hard to explain. I think most of us in this room get it.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the kind of saturation that that kind of hopefulness had in our lives, where we grew up watching people power, mm-hmm. have enormous effect on the policies of our government. It's hard to explain the feeling one gets from that. It is a feeling of community, and luckily we still know that in other areas. But to know that you can have an impact on the policies of your government to do the right thing is a grooviness. It truly is a kind of grooviness and almost a druggy grooviness. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm not sounding, you know, hysterical here, but I tried to invoke this in him, and he got it.
Right.
So I have to compliment him and credit him for the groove of the piece, and I think it has a 70s groove, and certainly we use a lot of jazz, you know, intentionally,
right.
But the in-betweens, the music that brings you, that bridges you from one area of the movie to another, Gerald Von Stoddard is responsible for.
Fantastic.
I don't have any of his in-betweens.
Oh, okay.
So people have to come and see the movie.
Okay,
to
great.
See that. But what I do want you to play, if you would, mm-hmm. which is a very interesting story, is the opening scene is of Silvia Baraldini's arrest, and it's done from eyewitness reports. Obviously, it wasn't filmed, mm-hmm. so we reenacted it. Now, in the actual arrest, 8 members of the FBI Terrorist Task Force were employed to arrest her in broad daylight on a public street in Manhattan. And this is done intentionally, where the FBI in conjunction with the police in the area, the New York City police, will show an enormous force in apprehending someone in hopes of getting the community to think that person is a horrible criminal, has mm-hmm. done something dreadful. So we actually tried to employ 8 people to do this, but we couldn't find enough for them to do. So we ended up having 6 actors. Mm-hmm. And we use a piece by the jazz artist, who is an electric violinist, Billy Bang, who is New York-based. And what's so interesting about the piece we use is it's from his album called Vietnam, The Aftermath. And his record company out of Montreal asked him at one point in his career to please put together a CD that would demonstrate or illustrate his feelings about being a young soldier in Vietnam. Yeah. And he said, I have to think about it. I really have to think about it. And he did. And he finally agreed. And it wasn't until 25 years after his experience in Vietnam that he was able to put this album together. And what I found so interesting was, the reason I was so taken with it, besides it's just amazing.
I must say, I actually heard him at the IMC about a year ago. They had Billy Bang up there.
That's so cool. But it took me 25 years to be able to deal with the subject matter of this film. As an artist, it took me 25 years to have enough distance from having been an eyewitness to these events and to acquire the skills as an artist to do this. So I found this piece for the opening of the film very fitting. And unfortunately, in any film, you're only able to use a portion of it. So you never will hear the entire piece within the movie. Mm-hmm. But I encourage everybody to look into this album called Vietnam, The Aftermath, Billy Bang's work.
Okay, let's take a listen.
Thank you.
just going to fade out a little bit on the Billy Bang here. And we're back with Margot Pelletier and the Tell It Like It Is crew. And Margot Pelletier is here today with us. We're going to actually go over a little time over the 11 o'clock spot, so hang with us, because she's going to tell us a little bit more about her film, The Freeing of Sylvia Baraldini, which is playing this Saturday at the Independent Media Center up in Troy, New York at 8 p.m. And for more information, you can go to their site, which is...
The Sanctuary site?
Yes.
Yes, it's www.mediasanctuary.org.
Okay, and I think there should be also something telling you how to get there, some instructions.
Yeah,
on their
sure there
site,
will be.
There's
yes.
a map. Yeah,
yeah, it's 3361 6th Avenue in Troy, New York.
Actually, is there a phone number?
Let's see.
Well, I can look for that in the meantime.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, great.
518-272-2390.
Great. So, and you had a question, Sam? Or
well, Margot, I just thought maybe you could tell us a little more about who Sylvia Baraldini is and perhaps a little about where she is now since... what the story that occurs in your film.
All right. Sylvia Baraldini is a former United States political prisoner who, after 15 years as a political activist in the United States, was arrested in 1982 and convicted of helping to free Assata Shakur, a former Black Panther and revolutionary, from prison, and of a bank robbery that never took place, and of contempt of court for refusing to answer questions to a grand jury investigating the Puerto Rican independence movement. She was given a 43-year sentence and served 24 years in prison. She was born in Rome, Italy, and came here as a teenager, was very influenced by the civil rights struggle. Mm. And she eventually, after a 10-year campaign, won the right to serve out her sentence in Italy. So that is where she ended up being unexpectedly released in 2006, and she lives there today.
Wow.
She also, unfortunately, towards the end of her incarceration, was a victim of breast cancer. Or I shouldn't say victim, but unfortunately.
She actually had cancer at two points. She developed cancer of the uterus while serving time in the infamous Lexington Control Unit, which was the first political prisoner built exclusively for political prisoners in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then, years later, when she was finally returned to Italy, after 6 months, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and at that point put in house arrest.
Amazing. So we have another piece that you would like to play?
Yeah. This piece is called Nod. It's actually a band that my brother is the drummer in. The band is called Negative Reaction, which is a sludge band. And
sludge?
Sludge.
Not the stuff in the bottom of the river.
I'm telling you the truth. You know, I was introduced to this genre through my brother.
Okay.
It sort of felt kind of punky and grungy to me, but mm-hmm. it's really called sludge.
Okay.
Sludge is sort of a sludgier, muckier version of grunge, maybe.
Okay. And this piece is a piece that we use within some footage that we found at the Washington National Archive in the public domain, which was footage that was actually filmed by a member of the people... probably an FBI person who actually went to raid illegally Pine Ridge Reservation in 1973.
Right.
And I don't think they know that their footage is in the National Archive. But we were fortunate enough to get it. And while you're seeing this footage, you'd be hearing the middle of this piece. So we're going to be playing it from the beginning.
Okay. When we come back, I want to ask you more about the footage because it's really amazing. And what is it like to collect this and what that involves?
So. One more thing.
Yeah.
I just want to say how much it means to a filmmaker when their family supports them and comes behind them. And a lot of our friends are musicians. Sam, for example, donated a piece of music to the film. But it was really great when John's band, my brother, mm-hmm. Negative Reaction, mm-hmm. give him another plug, donated this piece to the film.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
It's great.
All right. That was great.
So we're going to let that keep going in the background. And we're back with Tell It Like It Is. We're doing a runover edition here. We're here with Margot Pelletier, who is going to be screening her film, which has won numerous awards already in its 1 year of being out. It will be screening this Saturday at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. You can find out more about that. But let's go back to Margot and just talk about her brother real quick, and she can tell us about what's happening on Saturday. Or... Well, you just tell us a little bit more about your brother's
tell
band.
Tell us about band we were just listening to.
Well, that
to.
Piece that you were hearing and maybe are still hearing...
Yes.
...is from a split CD. And the company that produced it is called Psycho Doom, E-L-L-E-C-K. And Negative Reaction has a website, and that is www.negativereaction.com. INFOR. So you can find out more about their work there.
Okay,
and
great.
I hope that you do.
Yeah, thanks, Margot. I'm sorry. Okay, Alan, so you had a question for Margot.
Yeah, my question was in your attempt to document the experience of Spiridelli, did you find that you were able to both document the system as a tool of oppression, as well as the actual experience of the protagonists, individuals involved in the film?
Yes. I think throughout the film, you're feeling this back and forth kind of a play between the political organizations fighting for political change and the reaction of the government trying to maintain the status quo. And you also feel an escalation. So, for example, when the Panther Party is pretty successfully dismantled through various government tactics, some of which were infiltration, which then caused a lot of infighting, and so then the organization could actually bring itself down in some ways. You're seeing that organization transform, feeling that they no longer could just be a self-defense organization, that there needed to be something even more militaristic, and the formation of the Black Liberation Army. So you're seeing this escalation of both the repression of dissidents within the United States, but also the tactics for winning change. That's a horrible spiral to be up against. And, years later, 30 years later, we're looking at the situation we're in now, and things have escalated. I mean, they're more subtle in a way, mm-hmm. but not if you look at the prison system, okay? And not if you look at the wars that we're fighting throughout the world, and... not if you look at our economic situation, not if you look at our social programs, not if you look at our education and how that's falling apart. So I'm hoping that we're in discussions today to come up with strategies that don't lose so many human lives on one side or the other, really.
Amen. Do you feel these perceptions, since we've moved a bit to the right, are as conscionable to the general public as they were at the time you made this film?
I think that we're getting a little more fogged over.
Absolutely.
And, we're not getting... thank God for this radio station, let's say that, because this is a rarity in our time period. A lot of the alternative newspapers no longer exist. Some of them were actually bombed. Their equipment was destroyed. The organizations, the whole ability of the government to instill fear in its population has been pretty successful. So I think it's a very dangerous time. And that's why I'm very grateful for things like this radio station. Well, because it makes you not feel alone. you know, you're not so afraid to speak out when there's a lot of voices, right?
And that's true. And that is another reason why documentary films are so important, because what they do is they reveal history, which what we are embedded in right now is historical. People think that history is somehow disconnected to what's happening right now, but in fact it is embedded. We are embedded. What's happening right now directly came from a struggle that really has never gone away. It may have morphed a bit, but it hasn't changed in essence. And that's a lesson we need to learn. I heard Derek Jensen a week ago talking about that on Democracy Now, that we just need to keep on the table all of our possible all possibilities, because things haven't really changed. That as a parallel to what you were talking about in the environmental movement, he feels that there's a lot of patching going on. We'll have a patch, we'll fix this, we'll fix that, but none of it seems to really make a deep change, because I think it's a structural change that has to happen.
Yeah, it's like, what's at the root of the change that needs to happen? It's like you just said, Margot, about that we're being fogged over. I really like that, because it's, you know, on the way here today, I was listening on Democracy Now! They're talking about creating projects for restoring the rainforests, parts of the rainforests. And they're going to bring in all this money, all these giant financial people are coming in. But it's really not addressing the bottom line problem of cutting down wood from the rainforest. It's talking about making more wood. You know what I mean?
Well, the fact that they talk about it as wood and not trees,
yeah,
or that there are inhabitants in those forests.
Yeah, so it really comes down to this thing of sort of, you know, where this all this environment nonsense today is about, it's more talking about the money part of how to make money from the environment, instead of about changing our consciousness of how we're all living. And anyway.
Well, in wrapping up, and again, I want to thank you for coming into the studio. If we're going to go out with a piece of music the last piece of music of one of many pieces of music that you will hear in Saturday night's film.
This piece of music was actually donated to the film from the Juan Antonio Corajer Puerto Rican Cultural Center in Chicago. And it was made by a group of young people that are affiliated with that center. And it's called We Are, and it's used in the section of the film that talks about the Puerto Rican independence struggle. 500,000 people migrated to the United States from Puerto Rico in the 50s, partly because their economy was so weakened, partly intentionally weakened. And those people then in turn had children. The children grew up in the United States realizing that they were sort of a colonized nation within the U.S., and they weren't getting an equal shake in this land of promise. And in turn, there developed a resistance movement, the Puerto Rican independence movement. And that is delineated, however briefly, you know, how much can you do in a two-hour film. Anyway, this is a piece of music that's in that section.
Before we go to that, I just want to... I know I had you set that whole thing up, but I want to just very quickly go to... just very quickly, the process, because it was 5 years in the making of this film?
No, the film was made over a 10-year period.
Okay. And your commitment to 10 years of your life in making this film, both just to speak a little bit to the process and how why you would give 10 years of your life to creating this.
Right.
It's hard to talk about that briefly, but...
I think for a lot of us that were part of the political movements in the late 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, you can't escape trying to reinvent it. It's for many people, it's a high point in their lives because they feel a great sense of purpose. and a great sense of community. And certainly the movements make a lot of mistakes. I'm not saying they're perfect, okay? And some of their strategies are just really frightening and things we don't want to think about. And that's why it's only right to think about them in the context of their time and the conditions of their time. But for myself, try as I might, I actually, after I left the movement, I spent 6 months in prison as a political prisoner in Rikers Island. And when I got out of prison, the movements that I was part of were pretty much dismantled, and people went their separate ways. Okay. And I went on to pursue a career in fine art. I had come to New York to be a famous painter, got involved in the movement. So I went back to that, and I did all right. You know, I showed in the galleries and in the museums and things like that. But as I said earlier, around 25 years after my being someone that participated in the art market, which, by the way, changed drastically in that time too, mm-hmm. became increasingly sterile, by business people instead of artists run, my spirit was dying. And also, our country was becoming increasingly repressive. So these two things were like crawling up in me and bubbling over. And I was already corresponding with Silvia Baraldini while she had been incarcerated. So I began to talk to her through letters about the possibility of doing this documentary. And as I say, I wanted to focus on racism, which is why I would use her as the central character, her life intersecting with a black freedom fighter, Assata Shakur. So it was a very gradual thing, but it was a little bit of an exorcist for me, an attempt to not just heal myself, but to maybe heal a generation, and now let me be really highfalutin, a country, mm-hmm. you know? We have to go backwards in order to go forward. Mm-hmm. We have to look at our history, yes. and our mistakes and our victories.
Absolutely.
So it was kind of that process for myself. Lisa has her own process, and someday when she's not working to pay the bills, I'm hoping she can be here and talk about it.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. Also, just aside from the content process of for you personally, for me knowing you for about 8 or 9 years now and watching you through the process of this making of this film and all the struggles you've been through, it's almost like that is a whole nother story that could be a movie in itself.
Well, we'll definitely have you back for that.
Real life. Yeah.
So again, we're talking to Margot Pelletier, Thin Edge Films, which is their Gmail site, thinedgefilms@gmail.com. Upcoming screenings for The Freeing of Silvia Baraldini, Saturday, December 11th, 2010 at 8 p.m., The Sanctuary for Independent Media at 33616 Sixth Avenue, Troy, New York. Thursday, February 17th, 2011 at 6:45 at the University of Tennessee Hodges Auditorium. And Saturday, March 19th at 8 p.m. at the Art Rage Gallery, 505 Pauley Avenue, Syracuse, New York. All screenings will be followed by a question and answer with the filmmakers. So if we haven't covered your questions, and I'm sure you'll be filled with them at the end of this film, that you will be able to address them at that point with the filmmakers. I want to thank you again.
Thank you.
And we'll go out with...
with We Are.
Okay, great.
This is Tom Rowe on the Tell It Like It Is show. Is it still the Tell It Like It Is show now, or are we? Are we